Jay Mariotti here, and let's assume we actually believe that a videographer from the Patriots Productions Department, the same Patriots of Spygate, Deflategate, and Rub and Tuggate, was innocently filming a profile of a New England advance scout as part of a regular web series. If true, why would said videographer point his camera toward the field during a game, specifically the Cincinnati Bengals sideline, for 8 minutes? I understand maybe 30 seconds to show the next opponent the scout is studying, but 8 minutes? It never ends, does it? The stench that seeps out of Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
So, would the Patriots again be so brazenly reckless and dishonest in what is their current vulnerable state, the twilight of the Belichick-Brady era, that their front office would instruct this videographer to capture footage of the 1-12 Bengals in yet another attempt to illegally steal signals and inside information? Given their history of cheating, face it, the Patriots have lost all benefit of the doubt amid the new allegations of, ready? Scoutgate! Even if Bill Belichick is guilt-free this time and the football side has had no communication with the production people, as Belichick claims, Scoutgate casts a new set of aspersions on the Patriots dynasty and how unethical this franchise has been during its near two-decade reign. I don't care that the Patriots are taking full responsibility for, quote, an unintended oversight, unquote, based on optics and stupidity alone and the Patriots' dirty past. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell should recognize the mindless indiscretion here and hammer the Patriots again for a repeat offense as the NFL continues to investigate. I mean, did this videographer and his bosses not grasp, as they were, quote, creating content, unquote, the nefarious history of the Patriots and Spygate? If the video evidence shows a direct and lengthy focus on the Bengals sideline, then yes, the Patriots should be fined multiple millions of dollars and docked, I don't know, 2 first-round picks. And even if this was inadvertent, punish them anyway to some degree for ignorance. In the biggest picture, of course, the Patriots do symbolize a corrupt America in the 21st century, with baseball's Houston Astros under the same cheating cloud. And though it does seem to be a stretch that the scout would knowingly sit in the Paul Brown Stadium press box with dozens of reporters and Bengals and NFL employees in the immediate vicinity and openly spy on the Patriots' next opponents, hell, I would not put anything past Belichick. 12 years ago, he was fined $500,000 and the Patriots were penalized $250,000 and a first-round pick after a team employee was caught recording unauthorized footage of the New York Jets' signals on the sideline. The league found 8 tapes of game footage, remember, and written notes on scouting information accumulated over time. So with their win-at-any-cost mentality, why would we believe a word that Belichick said on WEEI radio, even as he claims the franchise has taken every attempt to be as honest as possible since Spygate? Sure, Bill.
Yeah, I heard about this. You know, evidently this is our production people on the TV show that were there. And I have absolutely nothing to do. We have absolutely nothing to do with anything that they produce, direct, or shoot or anything. I've never even seen any of their tapes or anything else. So this is something that we 100% have zero involvement with. This is something that you'd have to talk to the production people about, or what they were doing or whatever it was.
So was this your advance?
We've never seen anything that they've shot, other than what's going to be on TV. But from a football standpoint, we have absolutely nothing to do with the production people and what they do for the TV show and everything else. I tape a TV show with them, but that's there's no involvement whatsoever with them. I've never seen a tape or anything that they've shot anywhere in any capacity.
Your advanced scout was there at the game, but he was not videotaping on the field or coaches' signs from across the field.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. No, as I understand it, they were videotaping him, trying to show, you know, kind of what an advanced scout does or something like that. I don't know. You'll have to wait and see the show, I guess, and see how it's presented. Again, from a football standpoint, we absolutely know what the rules are, and we are 100% in compliance, to the best of my knowledge, of every single rule that we're responsible for.
At the very least, as I said, the Patriots are guilty of stupidity. Before the videographer and advanced scout showed up, shouldn't both men have been very aware of the team's treacherous past and maybe produced this feature with the camera always pointed away from the field? Or do it in the hallway? Or in the cafeteria? I don't know. Or, better idea, maybe skip the feature altogether on the advanced scout. Nope, they foolishly did this in open view, with a Bengals scout noticing the recording throughout the first quarter and alerting a Bengals executive who contacted NFL security in the stadium. In a way, it's fitting this happened. It reminds us that before we praise Belichick and the Patriots with hosannas and all-time accolades, which has been happening lately, we cannot forget some of the devious methods involved. And I've waited until now to talk about Robin Tuggate, owner Robert Kraft's prostitution romps in a massage parlor in a Florida strip mall, an ongoing case in which he is expected to slither away from prosecution or even a league penalty. The Patriots' run of 6 Super Bowl championships places them with the Steelers, 49ers, Packers, and Cowboys in NFL royalty. New England has the only run that deserves a big, fat, nasty asterisk. And this is only one problem in the Patriots' troubled house right now. Their fans can be real a-holes, some of them harassing Patrick Mahomes' girlfriend to the point she and a friend had to be moved by security at Gillette Stadium. And wither Tom Brady, Mr. Deflategate, who could be nearing the end of his unparalleled quarterbacking career unless he somehow makes plays without many playmakers and leads the Patriots back to the Super Bowl. Do we really think Belichick brings back Brady at age 43 when Brady finally is free of any contractual obligation to New England and vice versa? This could become a battle between Belichick and Kraft, who always has viewed Brady as a son. But in the end, if the Patriots do lose early in the postseason, Belichick won't want to pay Brady top-of-the-market quarterbacking value at his age. And in that vein, Kraft might be ready to start anew as well. But seriously, if Kraft can't talk Brady into retirement, where is Tom going to play? And who is going to pay him that money? The Buccaneers, the Panthers, the Giants, the Bears, the Dolphins. All of those would be depressing endings for Brady. He would be trying to hang on with an also-ran team long past his greatest of all-time prime. So finally, after ruling pro football for 2 decades now, it all appears to be tumbling down for the Patriots. And America doesn't know whether to laugh or laugh. Ha 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 ha! More on the NFL shortly, but Major League Baseball executives, as usual, are confusing the hell out of me. For years, we've heard the advanced metrics, Ivy League spreadsheet crowd minimize the importance of starting pitching, with the new emphasis on pitch counts and bullpenning and not seeing a lineup the third time around. Remember all of that? Just a few months ago, I think. But suddenly, there is this mad rush to give insane amounts of money to starters, with Steven Strasburg's seven-year, $245 million deal to stay with the Nationals, who paid about $30 million more than necessary, trumped by Gerrit Cole's stunning nine-year, $324 million deal with the Yankees. These guys pitch once every 5 days. Not a bad gig. Baseball is a monkey-see, monkey-do copycat industry, and when the likes of Strasburg, Max Scherzer, and Cole dominated October and sometimes even pitched out of the bullpen, the pendulum swung again quickly. Even though, here's a great stat, only 22 starters pitched 190 innings or more last season, and only two starters in the big leagues had as many as three complete games. Now you're going to see the likes of Madison Bumgarner and David Price, who have battled injuries and slumps, seeing their desirability rise on the market. True, Cole and Strasburg are in their prime, and they are state-of-the-art, and they are represented by the super agent Scott Boras, who always manages to raise the bar in regard to contracts and exert his power over the owners. But $545 million for two starting pitchers? Again, they work once every 5 days? Really? The Yankees swooped in and blew away Cole, who seemed headed to his hometown Angels. But keep in mind that when he sat in the stands as a kid at Angel Stadium, he was a Yankee fan. And finally, after drafting Cole but watching him go to UCLA and then missing out on Cole last year in trade talks, Brian Cashman and the Yankees got their man. Cashman brought manager Aaron Boone, former Yankee Andy Pettitte, and new pitching coach Matt Blake to visit Cole and his wife in California last week, and they didn't have to do too much talking, apparently.
It was an easy conversation to have. I thought that there was connection with all parties involved, and I thought Matt Blake did a great job of you know, trying to explain who and what he is and how he goes about his business, and I think it was a great opportunity for Booney, obviously, you know, as a potential manager, and then, you know, Andy Pettitte as a former player, you know, to describe obviously his experiences coming from Houston, Texas, where he grew up, and he grew up in Deer Park, Texas, and then coming to New York, and what's it like playing on the big stage, and, you know, Andy still has retained a home, obviously, in New York, and so that, you know, it says a lot. So it was less about trying to convince him about New York as much as educate him and his wife about New York, and because again, it's this process is all about, like, if they're going to make a good decision for their family, it's going to be a good decision for us. We don't want to drag anybody to an environment that they might not flourish or enjoy as well.
Somewhere, George Steinbrenner has stopped scowling after all these years, now that son Hal finally is acting like the old man and outspending the competition as perhaps the best team money can buy once again. And just think, the baseball payroll disparity is such that Cole's annual average salary isn't much less than the total payroll of the Tampa Bay Rays, who did make the playoffs last season in the American League East. Think of the ginormous pressure on Aaron Boone and all the Yankees next season. Win or implode. There's your challenge. And the Angels are doing what the Blue Blood Dodgers are not doing in L.A., reinvesting profits into the product in big ways, even though the Dodgers have considerably more resources as the long-established kings of this market. After locking in Mike Trout for a record $430 million last offseason, owner Arte Moreno brushed off the Cole rejection by signing Anthony Rendon, the best position player on the market, for a cool $245 million over 7 years. And Dodger fans are rightfully livid today. No Cole, no Rendon, under a baseball boss, Andrew Friedman, who, at the time this podcast is being recorded, had yet to sign a free agent from another club for more than $55 million throughout his career here in L.A. Friedman still hasn't signed his own contract extension, by the way, and maybe it's time for him to duck out. What's the deal? Are these orders from on high? How can you hoard $8 billion from this TV deal in L.A. that blacks out 70% of the market, and you lead the major leagues in attendance every year? You are printing money, and you don't go after Rendon the way that the Angels go after Rendon. Big problem if I'm a Dodger fan. I'm being abused by the management and, I believe, the ownership. So the Angels are trying to win for Trout, whose career has been diluted by no fault of his own by only one playoff appearance, as the Dodgers let these big-ticket items go elsewhere once again after repeated postseason near misses. The champion Nationals chose to overpay Strasburg over trying to keep Strasburg and Rendon, and while the Yankees make themselves World Series favorites with the Cole signing, and the Phillies augment their Zach Wheeler signing by striking a one-year deal with Didi Gregorius, we wait to see the decisions of three Blue Bloods, Red Sox, Dodgers, Cubs, as a 2021 labor impasse nears. Dodgers, they still have an opportunity to sign other pitchers. They need another starter. How about Bumgarner leaving San Francisco and coming to the rival, the arch rival? They need to strike. They need to do something. Are the Red Sox serious about trading Mookie Betts? I think it depends on the kind of talent haul they get in return, which also applies to the Cubs and Chris Bryant, who almost certainly is a goner. How pathetic is that? To the top bidder, regardless of how his service time grievance turns out. And then you have the Indians and Francisco Lindor, who is leaving Cleveland in free agency next winter, and the Indians need to get something for him. Imagine if the Nationals trade for Bryant, a third baseman nearly equal to Rendon, but without that monster price tag for at least another season. And when baseball people gather for a few days and gossip in the hotel lobby, the BS quotient rises significantly. Now, owners, executives, the commissioner spreading this bunk, the disproportionate to reality increase in home runs last season to an absurd 6,776 was caused by, get this, decreases in air resistance spurred by inconsistent seam height. But wait, as well as, quote, changes in player behavior, end quote. What are they suggesting here when they say player behavior? Launch angles and exit velocity is what I think they want us to think they're saying, but no, they really want us to think that the guys are loading up on steroids again. I can tell a labor impasse is nearing when they pull this dirty crap. Use another phrase, not player behavior. And by the way, if they are saying that players are using steroids, why isn't baseball investigating when we went through the steroids era before and baseball was complicit and hid and they had to pull Bud Selig out of his mothball nap to Congress? You remember all of that. Why aren't they investigating? You know why? Because MLB actually juiced the baseballs last season and then de-juiced the baseballs in the postseason. And baseball people lie. Back to the NFL, where the Raiders bid farewell Sunday to the dilapidated Coliseum, which fans there somehow have romanticized as a cult pit all through the years, with the black hole, studded costumes, a lot of weed, and sheer lunacy. So the least John Gruden can do for his $100 million is deliver a victory over hapless Jacksonville, unlike last week's stinker, which drew boos and anger from that home crowd. Derek Carr probably will not be the starting quarterback next season in Las Vegas. Gruden is sick of his turnovers and unreliability, and the fans in Oakland just might kill all of them if the Raiders lose the finality. I don't mean kill them literally, or I don't know, maybe I do mean that. If nothing else, the hapless world of New York football has drama. The Giants are preparing to fire coach Pat Shurmur, if not general manager Dave Gettleman. This as Eli Manning showed a flash of good Eli and then couldn't produce any points in the second half. Bad Eli. Then we have cornerback Janoris Jenkins tweeting a fan and calling him a, quote, retard, unquote, while on the practice field. Yes, Jenkins wasn't practicing because of an ankle injury, but what kind of a head coach lets anybody on a practice field have a phone and a tweet? No, Shurmur is not long for the East Rutherford dateline, but at least the Giants, if they hire the right coach, do have a future with Saquon Barkley in the backfield. They have wasted him so far. And the very good possibility, if they do have the number two pick, of Chase Young joining them in the draft. The Jets, as always, are mockable with $52 million bust Le'Veon Bell, providing the latest clown show when he was ruled out last Sunday with the flu, yet was well enough to go bowling very late the night before in New Jersey. Typically, Le'Veon doesn't see what he did wrong.
I can see from the outside of it if I was playing Sunday and they see me bowling.
You don't see any world?
No.
Adam said
Have you talked about him?
Yeah, me and Coach Gates talked about it. Obviously, he said, you know, just certain perspective is going to look a certain way. You know, so that's the only reason, that's the only thing why I wish I wasn't seen doing it. You know what I'm saying? But I don't, you know, feel bad about what I did. And I didn't break any rules or, you know, I wasn't a distraction until now that y'all see me bowling. So.
Besides, Bell says he rolled a 251. I'm not sure I believe that. Bell is one of eight NFL players who got guarantees between $56 million and $25 million in free agency last spring. The others, Nick Foles, Trey Flowers, C.J. Mosley, Landon Collins, Earl Thomas, Quan Alexander, and Jawan James. You know how many are fully justifying those investments? Zero! With only Thomas, Flowers, and Collins faring decently. The NFL isn't baseball. When football players get the big money, they often go slacker or they go bowling. And when the Giants lost to the flawed Eagles, it set up the nonsensical possibility that Philadelphia will win the NFC East by running the table, even though the Eagles have cornerback issues on defense and lack any kind of explosiveness on offense. That run would have to include a home victory against the comical Cowboys, who have enough problems dealing with the rejuvenated Rams this Sunday at home. This after the Cowboys cut kicker Brett Maher for Kai Forbath minutes after Maher visited sick kids in a hospital in his uniform. And for those who think we're making too big a stink about an 8-8 or 7-9 team still getting a home playoff game because it wins the NFC East, consider this. In 2010, Seattle won the NFC West at 7-9 and hosted the 11-5 Saints, a wild card team. Who won? Seattle! Seahawks advancing. Saints eliminated. Remember that. And those Saints lost more than a shootout last Sunday. They won't have star defensive end Marcus Davenport for the rest of the season after foot surgery. All the more reason to think the 49ers are the favorites now in the NFC. So now Odell Beckham Jr. wants to play for the Niners? Don't do it, John Lynch. Your chemistry is beautiful, Kyle Shanahan. Do not do this. OBJ means DOA, dead on arrival, for any future Super Bowl aspirations. Don't do it. To college football, where Joe Burrow already is a come-from-nowhere legend. He was so lightly recruited out of high school that he actually pondered playing for a Mid-American Conference team at his hometown, Ohio University. I went there. He was rejected by so many programs that he never expected to start in college, much less transfer from Ohio State to LSU and pick up the Heisman Trophy this weekend. When Burrow showed up at Ohio State in 2015, he wore Mickey Mouse t-shirts and SpongeBob. I can't stop laughing. SpongeBob pajama pants, and he was razzed by teammates for having a green tongue from sucking on apple lollipops. This courtesy of Yahoo Sports. I couldn't make this up. This had to be courtesy of a story. This is insane. Now, look at Joe Burrow. Maybe he'll bring an apple lollipop to the ceremony in New York.
I've been told I wasn't good enough since recruiting.
if you're a hard worker, people are going to respect you, and that's all I try to bring to the table.
Already we're hearing NFL teams question Burrow's arm strength while saying he's a product of Joe Brady's system at LSU. So Burrow will have to prove them wrong again in the NFL. Sounds sort of like a former Michigan quarterback who wasn't drafted until the 199th pick back in 2000. But I don't think the Bengals, even the Bungles, will not blow it. Joe Burrow, their local guy from southeastern Ohio, will be the number one pick, I think. And while an eight-team college football playoff would reward more teams and give birth to March Madness-like upsets, it would not have worked this year, so stop the nonsense. Why delay the inevitable when it's obvious that LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson are the very best teams? Could you imagine an Ohio State-Baylor or Clemson-Oregon quarterfinal? Don't water it down. It worked this year. It's working very well this year. And golf usually isn't a front burner topic in December, but it will be if the U.S. team does not recover at the President's Cup in Australia. Only Tiger Woods, the playing captain, performed well as the Americans for the first time since 2005 trailed after the first session against the international side, which has lost the last seven President's Cups. The Americans did not arrive down under until Monday after a 26-hour flight ordeal. Yeah, that's a very long flight, gents, that involved a stop for fueling. Was that a logistical blunder? Imagine Tiger having to explain that jet lag buried the American team. And Patrick Reed, yep, he's hated as much in Australia as he is in the U.S., but they still love Tiger. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, we have seen Spygate, Deflategate, Rub and Tuggate. Now, the New England Patriots give us Scoutgate. Your take, Chris.
Jay, I like that, Rub and Tuggate. I'm going to have to use that one. Well, I hope to avoid those kind of situations personally. Anyway, I'm not surprised. I'm actually kind of amused. And really, honestly, you're shooting the Bengals? And the Browns? Really? Is that really that important? Maybe they should have shot the Chiefs. Maybe that'd be important. Or maybe find a wide receiver to film. Again, I think the lengths that Bill Belichick goes to, what's the old saying? If you're not cheating, you're not trying. They're cheating. And they're trying. And they get caught a lot. That's the other thing. Why do you get caught so much? You think they'd be better off just stop getting caught.
And Chris, you work in LA Sports Radio. Explain how the Angels down in Orange County, the second team in these parts, can snag Anthony Rendon in a continuing spending spree while the stinking rich Dodgers do not outbid the competition for big tickets in free agency. I've got to imagine Dodger fans are furious.
Yes, Jay. LA Sports Radio is full of Dodger fans very upset that the Dodgers aren't doing anything and that the Angels are doing things and the Yankees are doing things. And the Dodgers, yeah, kind of quiet. Kind of quiet. You know, it's been brought up a lot about how the Dodgers in 1988 got a free agent named a gritty guy who was not going to put up with anything and went off in spring training on other players for joking around and pranking him. That player was Kirk Gibson. Dodgers don't seem to ever go out and get that gritty guy anymore. And that's an issue because they always lose in the playoffs or they always lose in the World Series. But the Angels don't even get there. And I don't know if Anthony Rendon makes them get there. Mike Trout's already been here, and that hasn't worked. Maybe their new manager, huh? Maybe that'll help. We'll see, Jay.
And Chris, do you believe that Le'Veon Bell, who was supposed to have the flu at the time, actually bowled a 251 last weekend? And honestly, Chris, what is your best bowling score ever? Tell the truth.
I believe my best bowling score, although I don't remember it, was once in the 200s, and that's because I was heavily intoxicated. I only bowl well when I'm intoxicated. When I'm not intoxicated, I'm probably in the hundreds or even less. I don't really know bowling scores. Le'Veon Bell, that guy's just a disaster, isn't he? In the sense of there's always something. And I understand people are fired up if he wasn't sick, if he was sick. It doesn't really matter to the Jets. The Jets got bigger problems than if he's bowling or not. Come on. Maybe they should all bowl more. Maybe that'll be better for them.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. The cultural reckoning of hockey continues with the Dallas Stars firing Coach Jim Montgomery for an unspecified act of, quote, unprofessional conduct, unquote. For decades, this was a boys-will-be-boys sport protected by secret codes, with abuse of players and racism running rampant. Not anymore, as Montgomery, Don Peters, Mike Babcock, and Don Cherry now know they are unemployed. Even Cherry. Michael Vick served 18 months in a federal prison for participating in a dogfighting ring. He has apologized often and donated his time and money to animal welfare causes. Society, football, and Fox Sports gave him a second chance, so the 500,000 people who signed a petition demanding that Vick be removed as honorary captain of the Pro Bowl next month, you know what, they should look in the mirror and ask if they deserve to throw stones. I'm guessing that 499,900 probably shouldn't be throwing stones. I don't feel sorry for Trae Young, but already he is burdened by the stigma of being favored on NBA draft night over the incomparable Luka Doncic. The Atlanta Hawks passed on Doncic in 2018, flipping picks with Dallas so they could select Young. And while Luka has become a prominent new face of basketball, Young is playing well in Atlanta, but he's frustrated with a 6-18 team. He threw an emotional fit in the locker room last week. Then it got worse. When Atlanta led Miami by 6 points with 59 seconds left in regulation, Young shouted on the court, "It's over!" Jimmy Butler heard this, and Butler and the Heat proceeded to score the next 22 points to win the game in overtime. Afterward, Butler wrote on Instagram, quote, "This man at Trae Young is a teller of the future. He was right. Game was over. Trae."
And now a final Mariotti commentary, too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Obviously, the Ford C. Frick Award is not a function of a broadcasting Hall of Fame, or a journalism Hall of Fame, or a diction Hall of Fame. It is presented annually to a broadcaster for, quote, major contributions to baseball, unquote. In the dubious case of Ken Hawk Harrelson, the Frick Award comically rewards hillbilly homerism, that's what I said, perfect phrase by me, and a career of shamelessly sucking up to the owner of a franchise that is going on 1-40 in the Jerry Reinsdorf era. White Sox, 1-39 as I speak, under Reinsdorf. That's a far worse percentage than even Harrelson's 239 lifetime batting average. Look it up. And didn't Harrelson also flop as a general manager? I have a feeling Reinsdorf greased some baseball palms, so to speak, as he did when Harold Baines, his guy, made the Hall of Fame. I'll leave you with a taste of that hillbilly homerism.
That ball hit hard. Get over his head. Way back. He looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes! That ball hit hard. And caught. And caught. Mercy. What a play by Adam Eaton. You gotta be blaming me. Yes, he did. He gone. And this ball game is over. Yes.
Big out. And he threw that slider in the dirt.
That ball hit hard. Hit hard. Stay in the air. It will. You can. Put it on the board. Yes. And the Sox lead it 7-5.
That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay. Reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life. He gone!